Good morning, Wake Up HCC. Chris Oviedo, Brendan Byrne coming to you from the basement of McEwen Hall. And today I know which date it is. I know yesterday was a little lost, but that's because my Fitbit had no battery.
Lost at your Fitbit.
Yeah. Right. I'm totally lost. It's not just my steps. It's like the date. Mm-hmm. I also lose track of the date if I don't have my Fitbit.
And if you can walk.
So today is Tuesday, May the 14th, right? If I walk without the Fitbit, it doesn't count. It does not
matter. Right. It doesn't count. Why bother walking? Without the Fitbit.
Exactly. There's nobody counting. There's no way I can prove that I walked.
Why'd you even come to work yesterday?
I know, really. I felt that way.
Your house.
I felt that way. But I wasn't worried about counting steps yesterday. So okay. It was all about work. I was focused on working yesterday.
Gotcha. Understood.
It's still a little cool this morning.
Yeah, it's still kind of gross.
It still feels like winter. It does not feel like spring. But spring and summer are coming. And with that, deer are coming out and, you know, the insects come back out. And there's a couple things that we don't have to worry about so much in the winter time, but we really need to be paying attention to during spring and summer and warmer weather months. I think I'm going to call it that because now I think that it's just extending, you know, like it's not anymore where you know that which months are going to be cold and which ones are going to be warm. It feels like it's just shifting.
There are no rules anymore.
Right. There are no rules anymore. And, you know, the reason I say that is because this morning we're going to talk about Lyme disease, and we have Candace Dickover here. She is with a group called the Howard County Lyme Group. Is that Lyme Disease Group Awareness? Is that
Howard
the name
County
of it?
Lyme Awareness Group.
Yep, mm-hmm. that's the name of it. And welcome, Candace, this morning to
our studio.
I'm excited to talk to you about, you know, your personal journey and what you're doing with the group to inform everybody about Lyme disease. So, let's start with your story. Let's start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, maybe where you're from and, you know, how you got involved with the group.
All right. Thank you for having me here. Well, my name is Candace Dickover, and I was actually born and raised in Pennsylvania.
Oh, samesies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what part of Pennsylvania?
Allentown area.
Oh, I'm Bucks County.
Oh, yeah, wow, very close.
You're Doylestown.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep, small world, yes. I went to college in Pennsylvania, but I got my master's at Loyola in Baltimore. And I was led down here, and I was living down here and met my husband, who is in the Navy, working, you know, down in the Crystal City area. And we met and married, and I was with the Navy for a little while. We moved around. We were in Jacksonville, Florida. And then we moved to Spain.
Oh, nice.
Then, wow. Yeah, that was beautiful. Didn't want to leave there. And then we were moved to Washington State.
Okay.
And then,
beautiful.
Oh, yeah. It was gorgeous. Just pristine beauty out there. Mm. Just really, really beautiful. And then my husband retired from the Navy, and we moved back here. And we were looking for, like, the best place to live and raise our children. And of course, we read that Money magazine. One of the best places to live was Columbia, like many other people have. And so we decided to look for and move here, and so we've been here since 2007, and we moved here in April, and I think it was June or July, I got a tick bite right after we moved here, and I actually got the bullseye rash, the rash that's synonymous with Lyme disease, and I say actually because many people think that, oh, you have to have the Lyme, that bullseye rash to have Lyme disease.
So I'm going to stop you right there. I'm sorry. Just because bullseye rash, you know, for people who might not be familiar with that, I mean, what does that mean? Is it like an actual rash or like what does it look like? What are we looking for when we talk about that?
Right. Yeah. Good question. It's the bullseye rash looks like the symbol for target, you know, the concentric circles.
Yeah.
And it is a rash that grows a little larger.
Mm. Around
it
the
surrounds,
area?
Right, the area of the tick bite.
Okay.
It's called erythema migrans is the actual official name for it.
Okay.
It is that rash. And I know most people think that that is the rash that you get, but there are many other different type of rashes that you can get. And some of them are oval in shape, and others are round, and others, like some people I know, had like all upper body, like their upper torso was covered in a rash. So they can be very different. And actually, a small percentage of people actually get a rash. Many people don't get a rash, like more than 50% do not get the rash. So, but if you get the rash, you absolutely have Lyme disease. There's no other test needed. Nothing else needs to be done. That is Lyme disease. End of story. Like that is the diagnosis right then and there with the rash.
Now, if you, I'm sorry, if you didn't get the rash, if somebody doesn't get the rash, could they still have Lyme disease?
Absolutely.
Though? Okay.
Absolutely.
That's just like a guarantee, 100%.
Yes.
Like if you have the rash, you definitely have it.
Right.
So when you have Lyme disease, I heard the tick has to like be on you for about 48 hours. Is that the case? Like 36 to 48 hours before?
Right. There's been a lot of back and forth about that. And the research has been all over the place because, first of all, when a tick bites you, it has something in the spit that is actually anesthetizing. And so you can't
feel it.
And it's not itchy. It's not like a mosquito bite. So you probably don't know you've ever been bit. Most people have no idea. And if you don't get the rash, you don't even know you have it.
Right.
So anyway, the amount of time, certainly the longer it's there. And if it's attached, you know, some people see it like crawling on them. Well, that's fine. Brush it off.
Yeah.
But once it's attached, it can pass disease at any time. So some studies have shown it passes, you know, as early as 30 minutes.
Wow.
And others say, oh, you have to have it on you 24 hours and all these different time periods. But many of us know, like, if you can't feel it, how do I know how long it's been there?
Right. You have no idea how to keep track of
it. Right, exactly. So it's kind of a funny question. Like, how long has it been there?
I don't know.
It's a bug. Like if I knew it was there, I would have taken it off immediately.
Yeah, I wouldn't have, you know, done something if I knew the tick was there.
Right.
Wow, that's scary. Like, how long does it take for symptoms to pop up like that after you have that bite?
Well, so, symptoms can show up any time within a couple hours to, like, a week or two or three or four.
Wow.
And they can just continue. Like, the symptoms can continue. So you may not immediately feel anything. And I know with mine...
Right, I know. I was going to say, let's go back to your journey. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
You actually
got the rush, right? And so what happened after that?
Yeah, my husband pointed it out. I didn't know. I didn't feel sick at that time. So there was the rash. It was on the back of my leg.
So how long after were you able to determine how long after you got bitten you actually got the rush? Like, was it? No. Okay.
Nope. It was just like, didn't know I was bitten. And my husband said, you have this rash. And he said, I think that's Lyme disease. And I was like, what? So went to the doctor and the doctor gave me 10 days of antibiotics.
Okay.
And actually, I found out much later on that they actually put in their bug bite, which is kind of funny. But it was, you know, Lyme disease, like I had mentioned. Like, if you have that rash, and mine really did look like that target lesion, then you have Lyme disease. So anyway, they gave me 10 days of antibiotic. And usually the antibiotics that are treated from the get-go is doxycycline. And so I got 10 days of that. And but within a few weeks after that, I wasn't feeling right. And within like maybe 2 months,
were you tired or like
I was,
you say
I was
not feeling
tired.
Right?
And I it was strange. I now know it as brain fog, where I couldn't think clearly, and it was really strange. To me, it felt like cobwebs in there that I had to, like, I'm just trying to clear my head. It's just a strange feeling, and I just couldn't think clearly at work, at home. And I went back to the doctor, and they said, no, you know, we don't see anything wrong, and, you know, they couldn't figure out what was going on.
Really?
Yeah. And then other problems started happening, like the typical symptoms of Lyme disease. You hear a lot of people talk about joint pain, And yeah, I mean, initially you can feel like flu-like symptoms after the tick bite and things, and just, yeah, not feel yourself and fatigued. Well, I was getting more and more fatigued with doing nothing. I mean, it, you know, it was just my daily routine. I'm like, why am I so tired? And over time, I noticed myself like having to have like drink a Coke at lunch just to stay like awake and alert.
Wow.
And, you know, these things were happening, and I kept going back to the doctor periodically. And in fact, they said, gosh, maybe that's Lyme disease, but you were treated already, so it shouldn't be. And then as time went on, they would test me again. There are two tests that they use for Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. One of them is the ELISA, E-L-I-S-A, the ELISA, and then there's a Western blot test. And one is supposed to, you know, they're supposed to catch it, but the problem is both of these tests are terrible.
Yeah.
Really, truly. Mm. Like, it's known across the board. They're terrible. What they're actually doing is not testing for the bacteria. Lyme disease is actually a bacterial infection. They're testing for your antibodies that your body makes in order to fight the bacteria. Actually testing for the presence of the bacteria.
Yeah, it's just testing if your body's reacting to the presence of the bacteria.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The problem, major problem, is that this bacteria is known as a stealth bacteria.
Okay.
It can hide in your body. It can change. It actually morphs into different forms.
Yikes.
And it mimics other diseases, which is really crazy.
Wow.
Yes. It's like, what? I can't believe this. Like, this, I mean, it sounds like science fiction.
I was going to say, it sounds like an alien movie almost.
Right, yeah. Right, doesn't it?
Yeah. I guess people really underestimate how just incessant the bacteria can be.
Yes.
You know, because I read a little bit of your background on the website, and you said you had to get it was to the point where it was like messing with your nervous system, right?
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, within the first 6 months, I was having this major brain fog and things, and then I was having heart palpitations, so much so that I'm seeing a cardiologist, and you know, and it felt like I was having a heart attack at, you know, more than once. It was extremely frightening. Then it was affected my nervous system, and I felt tingling in my legs and my knees. And I was in good shape, really good. I mean, I was going to the gym several times a week. I was in a kickboxing class, and you know, so I was very active.
Right.
Wasn't, you know, and I had this like tingling, almost to the numbing feeling in your legs. So when I'd take a step, it would feel like reverberations going up my legs.
Wow.
And then I started having back problems where my back would go out. I wasn't even 40. I was like, what is going on with me? I mean, there were things affecting several different systems of my body. It was my heart. It was my brain. It was, you know, my nervous system. It was my back. It was musculoskeletal, you know. It was joints. My joints were so bad. It would be my ankles, my knees, and my hips. All at the same time, and it would just, at some points, it would just be so painful to walk.
Wow.
And it was,
you were being proactive. You were going and seeing all those different specialists, right? You were seeing all those different doctors, and you had been treated for Lyme disease.
Right.
So what, you know, I mean, after all of this and you continue to get all of the symptoms, when was it that somebody actually said, okay, this is Lyme disease, and this is what needs to happen so you can be, you know, back to yourself. Like, you can go back to yourself. How did you reach that point?
It was 4.5 years of misdiagnosis, you know, sending me from one doctor to another doctor to another doctor. And then finally, it was to the point where, like I mentioned, my back kept going out, and they did MRI, an MRI on my back, and then they did up my neck, and they saw these white lesions, and they said, we're going to go up to your brain and do your brain as well. And they looked and found these white lesions in the MRI, and they said, you have MS, multiple sclerosis, and you'll need to see a neurologist. And I was like, well, great, I already have a neurologist who's trying to figure out what's going on. And so I went back to him and said, this is what they said, they have MS. And he said, absolutely not. He said, I treat lots of people with MS. You do not have MS. So he had them, he had a neuroradiologist reread the MRIs.
Yeah.
And they said, no, it's actually late stage Lyme disease, that it's, you know, it's in your brain, and it mimicked MS.
Wow.
Because these lesions look very similar to what they see in MRI scans for MS patients, but I think it was...
But you didn't have MS.
I didn't.
So how did it mimic MS? I mean, that's just fascinating.
Right.
You know?
I guess I think they said that the lesions, these white lesions, had to do where they were, although they looked like MS lesions, it had to do with the blood flow and maybe where they were positioned and things like that, that they knew that's not MS, because MS does something certain.
Okay.
That's crazy.
But, yeah, and...
And so what happened after they figured it out, you know? I mean, what was, at that point, you know, the diagnosis and the, I guess, the vision, you know, for the future? Because 4.5 years is it's a long time for it your body to have to process this and be with it and misdiagnosis and everything else. And, I mean, you're basically allowing it to just grow.
Yes,
right?
That's exactly what it was. It was just flourishing and going everywhere and affecting everything.
Right.
So the diagnosis was late-stage Lyme disease, and the neurologist that I'd been seeing, because actually I started to go to him because I knew I had early-onset Alzheimer's. Because my ability to think, to reason, my cognitive processes, you know, this working memory, being able to... I lost... long-term memory, short-term memory. I mean, remembering things from my children's birth and through their formative years, not a thing. I could look at pictures and it didn't ring any bells. Like, okay, well, it's me and that's my son. I mean, I know, but nothing else. There's no memories there. They were gone. I couldn't access them at all.
Is this because of the tick bite or is this separate?
Oh, no. This was Lyme. This was Lyme disease.
Wow. Yeah. So because of Lyme disease, it started looking like Alzheimer's, it actually put you in
I felt that it was Alzheimer's
Alzheimer's.
I thought, there is no way. Because I actually had to leave my job for a period of 3 years.
Wow.
Because I couldn't think straight. Mm. It was to the point where I cook dinner every night for, you know, 15, 20 years by that point, and I couldn't figure out how to make dinner, and it was even like, what do I do with this pasta? I couldn't make those connections.
It sounds
really weird.
Wow. Yeah.
But it was to the point where I even lost words, meaning like, you know, I'd say, you know, this thing that you do this, and they'd have to guess, like, toothbrush? Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like, oh, I just forgot the word for a moment.
Right.
I mean, sometimes it would be several days later I'd remember a word.
Yeah.
It was really that bad.
Wow.
And, you know, I was employed, and I couldn't keep things together. Mm-hmm. I would have to actually overcompensate, make lists and lists upon lists of things that I should know, but I couldn't access any longer. So, at any rate, I forgot what the question was initially.
So once you guys determined that that's what it was, what was the plan of action after that? You know, how do you revert all of the damage that's already been done? And, I mean, was there a positive outcome, or what did the doctor tell you, I guess, is my question, you know, once they finally figure it out?
Mm-hmm. Well, the neurologist said, you have late stage Lyme disease, we're going to put you on IV antibiotics. And you get this PIC line, which is inserted into your arm, and it goes actually to your heart, which is frightening in itself.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have to take care of it, and you hook up every day to this PIC line, and you know, you get these antibiotics IV, and they're really strong, and they're supposed to kill the bacteria.
Okay.
And that was the plan. It was 30 days of that, and then that was going to be it. However, once I found out it was Lyme disease, I delved into a lot more research, and mm-hmm. I tried as much as I could. I had to keep rereading things again and again because nothing would stay. But, you know, we looked further and further into it, and I heard of these Lyme-literate doctors, LLMDs they're called. And they are doctors that, you know, really know about Lyme disease. And I say that because most of our doctors, yes, they know of Lyme disease, but there's so much misinformation out there. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but many of our doctors don't know that much. And and so these Lyme-literate doctors were supposed to be more helpful. And so I looked into one, found a Lyme-literate doctor. And for some reason, something told me not to tell the neurologist because he had this, when I saw him and talked about it, he had this kind of idea of Lyme disease, like, oh, you're going to take this and then you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Well, like 4.5 years of damage, like, I mean, I was hopeful, like, that would work, right?
Right.
But it didn't, by the way. but it helped, but it didn't.
It didn't get rid
and
of
so
the
I
bacteria,
saw
yeah.
right. So I saw this Lyme literate doctor, and he actually gave me something to protect my stomach, lining of my stomach, probiotics, and he gave me medication to protect my gallbladder, which is typically affected by the Rocephin, which is the IV antibiotic that they use. And he did things because he knew more,
right?
You know, which I was so so grateful for, and he set me on a path, and I would go for years for treatment instead of, you know, actually that IV antibiotics with the neurologist. Once we hit the 30 days, I said, it's working. Like, I could feel something working, but it's not there. Like, it just, so here's an idea. I was on the antibiotics, and I could barely move or function. Just everything hurt. And, you know, it was my head. I couldn't think clearly. My back, I mean, it was just everything. I could barely walk. I couldn't walk to the mailbox. It was really miserable. But I could feel something working. But it just wasn't, I wasn't there yet. And mm-hmm. I knew it. And he actually yelled at me and said, if I was to give you more antibiotics, you know, I'd be up for malpractice. And this is ridiculous. You know, you'll be fine. And I mean, it was so frightening and crazy. But this other doctor, Lyme literate doctor, he really took care of me and helped me feel like, okay, you know, this is what's going to happen. This is how you'll feel. And, you know.
So you just had a deeper understanding, to kind of guide you and put you at ease through the process.
Right.
Did he also use antibiotics?
He did.
To treat you?
He did. And antibiotics, and use those as well as nutrition and supplements, meaning like other vitamins, because, and I've, you know, since found out all the research that I've done, all the books that I've read and things, found out that Lyme disease really depletes your immune system, really knocks you for a loop. So building up your immune system so your body can actually fight on its own or help in this process is really what's needed. So it's kind of a building up as well as a killing of the bacteria. But like I said, this bacteria is can hide, and it can morph into other forms. So that initial doxycycline antibiotic, if it's not, if it doesn't kill it right at the outset, then the bacteria actually turns into a cyst form, which antibiotics are blocked and can't get in unless you use a different type of antibiotic that busts that open.
Yeah.
And then there's a third form. And so it's like, wow, there's really a lot to it.
Right. And it sounds like you really got to understand the disease in order to be able to combat it. So, you know, finding like a Lyme disease expert sounds like it's what needs to happen. If you feel like you have Lyme disease, your doctor might just not have the right knowledge to help you fully recover from this.
Yes.
So
it sounds like people like really underestimate how pervasive this disease can be. Like people, you know, they say, well, it's only like affects 0.1% of the U.S. population each year. It's like, that's still 300,000 people.
Right.
You know, a lot of people contracting that. It's still a big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we only contract it through a tick bite, or is there other ways that Lyme disease can be contracted?
It's through the bite of a tick, but they are finding that biting flies and some other insects, even mosquitoes, could potentially pass it. They could be a vector to carry it. You know, if they bite something that has Lyme disease and then, come to you. Yes. So that's possible.
So
as well.
Really, I guess then the important thing is to watch out for the rash, right? As like the onset. Not really, because you said that not everybody gets it.
Yes. I think we were talking before that the rash may be, it's definitely less than 50%, and some people are saying it's 25%. So then most of us don't get a rash at all.
Right.
And so actually, all four of us in my family got Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. My husband and two sons all went to one Cub Scout camp, which my doctor then called Camp Lyme. And they all got multiple bites, even though they sprayed with the DEET and things. They all got multiple bites, and only, so I got that target bullseye looking rash. My one son got an upper torso rash, which when we went to the pediatrician, they said, it's just contact dermatitis. Maybe he put cologne on or something. Okay, but I said, but he just got multiple tick bites. You don't think it could be that? And they said, no. And then my husband and my other son didn't get a rash at all. So out of just the four of us, you could see the percentage.
Right, there's a huge inconsistency among your family on what to look for. So, I mean, is there anything that people should look for then, because we're all going to be out. It's the time of year. We're starting to be out. I mean, it's a little warmer. I know today it's the exception. But it is getting warmer, and we are starting to go more and more out. So what should we look for? What should we, as we're going out, what should be aware of so that we can have this idea of Lyme disease in our minds, still be able to enjoy the outdoors because we don't want to tell people not to go outdoors.
Right.
If we can't feel, and like you said, maybe they're discovering now that even not just tick bites, but maybe other insects might have the possibility of transmitting Lyme disease. So what are certain things that maybe we can for sure start, when should we start thinking this could be Lyme disease and not just a cold or not just, anything else?
Some of the symptoms would be that flu-like symptoms right afterward. And flu isn't typically in the summer. So when you get that, you really should consider, hey, this is something's different about this. That fatigue, just fatigue that's abnormal for you. Okay. Because, I can't tell you what your fatigue might be or yours, but to know
that
for yourself.
That fatigue was normal that you just saw.
That's true. It's very standard.
That fatigue. And then if you, certainly over time would notice, that your joints are really hurting or obviously inflamed. That's like another big sign of the inflamed knee or elbow or something like that. And that's typical. Some people actually get a Bell's palsy in their face where their face droops.
Wow.
That would be a huge sign.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be a big red flag.
Right. But I've noticed too, and many of the folks that come to the groups and over time, you would notice that it's not just one area. It's affecting multiple, like I had mentioned earlier, systems of your body. Like,
so maybe
hey, it's
that's
not just
the key.
This brain fog, but now I'm having problems with, my joints, or now I'm having problems with my heart, or, things like that. So
maybe that's the key to see if different systems kind of like start malfunctioning. So, for somebody who had no problems before, maybe in the back of your mind you want to consider Lyme's and just get tested for that. Is there just one test? But because you said there's two tests, not the most effective. So is there a sure way to be able to tell? I mean,
It really is supposed to be a clinical diagnosis. Doctors are supposed to look at your whole clinical picture and decide. Those two tests were actually never meant to be used, pardon me, for diagnostic purposes. The CDC actually created those, you know, those tests were for surveillance purposes. But they, because we live in such a diagnostic society, they've now become like the tool to use. But, you know, everybody said, oh, they're horrible, that they really don't, they're not specific. They're measuring, you know, something that this bacteria can get around, and it can. And so,
scary.
Yeah, so that's really unfortunate. Yeah. So I think the best thing that we can do for ourselves is prevention.
Right.
It's huge. And I have two boys in Scouts, and my husband's really involved in the Boy Scouts as well. And, you know, I felt like I could never go back into the outdoors after what I went through. It was like, it was terrifying.
Right.
But they've encouraged me over time to get back out there. And the only way that we do that, and they spend lots of time out there in the woods, you know, and things, is permethrin. It's permethrin is actually an insecticide that you put on your clothing and shoes and hats and bandanas and backpacks and even tents. And that actually protects you in, you know, so the others like DEET or the lemon eucalyptus, you know, or any of these others, some of the more natural ones, they're supposed to be a deterrent.
Right.
And so the ticks don't like them. But you know what? The ticks, they crawl somewhere where they're haven't sprayed.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or where it's worn off. This, if a tick comes into contact with treated material, it will die. It will fall off dead.
Okay.
I mean,
that's pretty effective.
Yeah, that's really effective. And it is awesome. And this is, we use on everything when they're going, when my kids, my husband's going to be out in the woods camping or anything like that. It actually binds with the clothing. So you actually spray your clothing with it, let it dry. And once it's dry, it's colorless, odorless. You can't detect it.
That's cool.
It doesn't stain anything. I mean, you wouldn't put it on silk, but but anything else you can treat it with.
And you're going to go outdoors with silk anyway.
Right, yeah, exactly. So not a worry there. But it actually, it will protect you for 6 weeks.
Okay. Even if you
washings.
Wash it? Okay.
Mm. 6 washings. Right. I mean, how awesome is that?
Yeah, no, that's great.
That's pretty cool.
So, but here, if anybody wants to take just one thing away from this, it's spray your shoes. So, and I'm talking about gardeners, dog walkers, you know, any of us, joggers, spray your sneakers or your shoes and spray them a couple of times during the summer. Mm. And if your shoes are treated, it's giving you 70% protection because ticks crawl up. So they start down there and they crawl up. So unless you're rolling around in the grass like kids do, in which case, you know, treat their jackets and their clothing as well. But it, in the very least, if you treat your shoes. And I've talked with plenty of gardeners and things who are getting ticks because they're right there in the ground. They're doing the work. Spray your gloves. Spray your gardening gloves. You know, and, you know, when I send my boys out on these Boy Scout camping trips and things, we spray you know, boots and socks, shorts, shirts, bandanas, backpacks, like I mentioned, spray everything. And one bottle, it's, you know, it's like maybe $13 or $16. You can get it on Amazon, REI, Walmart, many places. And it will treat, you know, a good percentage of your clothing. Mm-hmm. So you could spray quite a lot. I think we used maybe 2 bottles for when our boys went out to Philmont, which they hiked for like 100 miles, and they were out there for 14 days.
Wow.
And we sprayed absolutely everything.
Right.
And it was just 2 bottles worth. So it really is inexpensive, but it's a way to feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like if I say that, going through what I've gone through, and my sons and my husband going through what they all went through, you know, this is
it's something that
works. Sure thing.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful way. I mean, we still do use the spray, like the DEET or you know, something on your skin for extra protection. But but this is fantastic. But
it's a very good product to keep handy. I know we are over time on our broadcast here, but you have a fascinating story, so I'm not upset. I do want to ask one question before we cut it off on our radio stream. So recovery, right? If you've had Lyme's disease, in your case, I mean, you even had it misdiagnosed for 4.5 years, and you were definitely feeling the effects of it. The recovery, is this a type of disease that you can fully recover from, or is this a type of disease that if it does not get treated, I mean, is it lethal? You know, like what's
sure.
What's the outcome, I guess, from this, mistreated or treated? And if you catch it, is it the type of disease where even under treatment, you know, what's the outcome?
Right. So obviously with under treatment, those 10 days were not enough, the ones that I received, not enough to kill it. And so, so that's why mine continued to grow.
Right.
But with others, it can turn. What mine ended up becoming was more of a chronic type of illness.
Right.
So, and that, yes, it's harder, but I do definitely want to give hope, because what we found over time in several, if you want to check out LymeDisease.org or ILADS, ILADS.org, those are two fantastic organizations. But LymeDisease.org did this over 10,000 people study of self kind of study of people with Lyme disease, and had them self-report on lots of things. So they have all this fantastic data. But over time, what we've seen is it's not just antibiotics that will kill this thing. Typically, if you get it right in the very beginning, if you have that, you know, bullseye rash, if you know it's Lyme disease and you can hit it right from the beginning, then 30 days of doxycycline should kill it.
Okay.
30 days. Some people even say double that to 60 days. But if you can get 30, that's fantastic.
Okay.
And for the rest, is we found that antibiotics plus herbals will, and that's what ended up bringing me up most of the rest of the way. I'd say I'm like 90% better, you know. And so I'd like to offer a lot of hope that there are definitely things out there that can help. And some, you know, there's people in my group that have had it for 15, 20 years.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and it's like, wow, how can you know, get everything? But it is. It's a combination of things. And it's also, you know, eating well and right and taking care of yourself, building up your immune system and things like that. So
you have to look at it from a much bigger picture, not just as a Lyme disease. I mean, because you're talking diet, you're talking, you know, all of these other factors that I would have never thought had anything to do with Lyme's disease. So,
And this is affecting 300,000 new cases every year. That doesn't include all of the cases of people that have it now chronically, or, you know, the ones from last year. These are 300,000 new cases. And, this disease is in every state, every single state in the United States, and it's across Europe. Basically, it's the Northern Hemisphere all have this major issue because the ticks like the temperate zone, and so they thrive in that. And by the way, ticks here in Maryland, we actually have to kind of be concerned all year round. They can actually survive the winter. They can survive snow. So
funny because we don't think about them
for
the winter. Well, I'm going to move.
South, like Argentina or something.
Yeah, maybe to a space station. They're everywhere. I know they say like 95% of them are in like 14 states, and we're in one of the states.
Oh, yes, yes.
But they're everywhere, so I'm just going to leave. The planet, I think, is the best call.
Yeah. But you have a support group. You have this group where you are trying to bring awareness and supporting those who are already in it. Mm-hmm. Let's tell everybody how to connect with you, where to find you, so that if somebody has questions or is going through this and an experience maybe similar to the one that you had where doctors were just not, you know, figuring it out, you know, they can come to you and maybe you can give them a little bit more light, right?
Sure, sure.
Where to go and what to do.
Yes, absolutely. Right. So I have a support group that meets once a month, and you can go on hclyme.org is the website. for some resources and things. But then there's a Facebook page. It's Howard County Lyme Awareness on Facebook, which I post some things periodically. And people can contact me by the email address limeaware1@gmail.com. So limeaware1 at gmail. And I'll be happy to help point you in the right direction. I know for so many people, it just feels like you're alone. And that's, in fact, why I started the group, because I thought, oh, my gosh, there's four of us that have Lyme disease in our family. And then once I started talking about it, so many people said, oh, yeah, so-and-so has Lyme and so-and-so has Lyme. And I was like, this is crazy. Why isn't there something out there? You know, why aren't we hearing about this more?
Right.
So that's what why I started it.
So LimeAware1. At gmail.com is the email address where you want to connect with Candace and talk to her about Lyme disease. If you have questions, if you have somebody who maybe you're listening to this conversation and you're like, wait a minute, I know this person who still haven't figured out what they have and it keeps changing, maybe it's the time, you know, to talk to Candace and see if maybe it falls under Lyme disease. So we're going to close our broadcast, but we're going to stay on Facebook for a little bit. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Have a wonderful Tuesday. I have to remind myself that it is
Tuesday. Stay warm and stay dry.
Yes, and we'll be back tomorrow. Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.